From Creative Force, I'm Daniel Jester, and this is the e-commerce content creation podcast. We have talked a lot on this podcast about agility and scalability and automation. It can sometimes sound like a huge undertaking to pivot a large in-house studio towards automated processes. Automation doesn't have to be a huge project. Automation can begin with the tools any studio is using today. Mark Berenson joins me on the podcast for this episode to talk about some of his learnings during his time at Stanley Black & Decker and what he's been working on since.
But the philosophy needs to change, and that you need an automation mindset. And we don't get that from leadership. They're just saying, can you work faster? Can you work faster? So now it's up to us to say, yeah, how do we start using automation? How do we get that mindset? And then it has to say, well, at the very beginning. So we're in the capture sessions. How could we use automation? You know, how can we identify ways to make transformation with automation without all the downfall, to, you know, the explosions that can happen when you go off track?
Before we dig in with Mark, I'd like to remind our listeners of some upcoming events. First up, the Henry Stewart Photo Studio Ops Forum 2022 in New York City on May 4th. We will be recording a live episode of this podcast during the event. I'm very excited to do this. It's something that we've been talking about doing since almost day one of launching this podcast, doing a live podcast recording at one of these events, so I hope to see you there. You can take $100 off your registration fee with the discount code CONTENTPOD100. That's right. Your boy has his own discount code, CONTENTPOD100. I don't know why I'm so excited about that. The following day, on May 5th, also in New York City, is the Pixels Flow event, where I'll be moderating a roundtable discussion at that event. It's looking like that roundtable is going to shape up to be something kind of post-production centric, some good panelists lined up so far. I don't want to share anything yet because I'm not sure what is locked in and what is still up in the air, but going to be another great conversation, another great event. So those two events back to back in the Big Apple, New York City. Hope to see you there. Now let's dig in with Mark Berenson. This is the e-commerce content creation podcast. I am your host, Daniel Jester, and joining me for this episode, Mark Berenson, formerly of Stanley Black & Decker. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure, Mark. Before we get into the topic, the reason that we brought you on the show today, I wanted to do something a little bit new for this podcast, but there was some big news that dropped earlier this week as of the day that we were recording this, that Profoto has acquired automated imaging device company StyleShoots. So I know that there's some of our American listeners who are familiar with StyleShoots. They're not around here in the US. I think they might be a little bit more popular in Europe. And we certainly have some listeners in Europe who are aware of StyleShoots. But Mark, for me, this was pretty big news. I wasn't expecting an announcement like this. Profoto really signaling, I think, some investment into automated workflows above and beyond, you know, lighting devices, which they are arguably the industry standard for the most commercial studios.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Profoto, they're the go-tos for anything strobe, anything lighting. There must be something to it. I'm not that familiar with it. I'd love to take it for a test drive. It'll be really exciting to see what comes down the road with it.
I visioned a future, and I actually talked about this with Patrick during the Pixels Flow event back in February, but the first time that I ever played with that Profoto, they had a pack and strobe that came out that could be controlled with software on the computer. So you had like an, I think it was like an Ethernet cable of some kind that was connecting the computer to the pack itself, and there was a little Profoto software that you could adjust the pack settings from the computer without having to like walk over to the pack itself. It was really great for a lot of workflows where your capture station isn't close to where the pack needs to live. And I remember thinking at the time, and I talked about this with Patrick, it would be so cool to integrate that with Capture One and treat the output settings of the power pack like a next capture adjustment, so to speak. So treating the settings on the strobe itself just like how you have adjustments attached to individual images in Capture One, because that's, Mark, as you know, that's the one thing that we can't account for. We can copy and paste adjustments from one image to another to make sure that we're consistently applying these images. We can build presets. We can do all of this stuff. But the missing part of the puzzle was, what was that strobe's output setting set at? And I don't know, maybe Patrick listened to me. I feel like this was probably in the works long before February, but it'll be really interesting to see where this goes, what they decide to do with style shoots, that both the devices and the underlying technology.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I think it needs to be, you know, really looked at in its totality. Maybe there are users or companies out there this could be a really good fit for. I'm not sure who, because again, I'm not as familiar with it. It's like a one-stop shop. And if they can perfect it and they can give people what they're looking for, then great. It helps the industry, helps us all work faster.
Yeah, very interesting. Very excited to see what comes out of it. But that's, I mean, I guess that kind of is a little bit what we're here to talk about with you today, Mark. So to set the stage for our listeners, Mark, you reached out to me on LinkedIn and said some pretty interesting things in my LinkedIn messages about automation and agility and scalability. And we decided to set up a meeting and talk with you about some of the things that you had been thinking about and working on. We invited you to come as a guest on the show to talk about exactly that. And what you laid out for us in that sort of pre-production meeting that we had was what struck me as kind of a roadmap for a new or younger studio, or a studio that's been around for a few years that is struggling to figure out how to automate and how to build a system that they can scale, that can meet the needs, the changing needs day to day of the studio and the business itself. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about on this episode of the podcast. And just for our listeners, this could turn into a two-part episode where we get into some of the actual specifics of some of the things that Mark and his team, it sounded, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, like some team members from your crew at Stanley Black & Decker and maybe some other relationships that you had, kind of really thinking about automation and sort of how to approach automation in a way that is organic and adds value to the studio and leverages the tools that you have already. But I'm going to launch in. I'm talking way too much for this episode for me. So I'm going to launch in with our first question. Mark, when a studio begins to think about automation, you know, they want to build something that is agile and scalable, where should they look first?
So I'm not going to try to, you know, make this a lighthearted answer, but it's in the philosophy of how you work. You know, we are the type where we get on set, shoot, send it off for clipping, if that's it, or now there's some new great automation for our ruling backgrounds, but then comes the process of retouching. But the philosophy needs to change, and that you need an automation mindset. And we don't get that from leadership. They're just saying, can you work faster? Can you work faster? So now it's up to us to say, yeah, how do we start using automation? How do we get that mindset? And then it has to say, well, at the very beginning. So we're in the capture sessions. How could we use automation? You know, how could we identify ways to make transformation with automation without all the downfall, you know, the explosions that can happen when you go off track? And it's really just, you know, looking at it from end to end of what each person's doing. Do they need to do that from start to finish or not? So one example is, you know, we think of retouchers, and retouchers take what we give them, it's clips, they work on it. But really, instead of just clipping, why don't we think of adding on the tone curves and some basic adjustments and building those files for the retouchers so we can get them to the 70, 80% mark, and then they do what they're paid to do is retouch. We don't need retouchers to add contrast to these hundreds upon hundreds of images. Can we automate that?
Yeah, what you're kind of describing is this idea that I've certainly used this approach in studios before as well, where it's like, okay, what are the things that we have to do every time?
Yep.
Clipping is super easy. We know that, and the industry knows that, right? The industry has hundreds of options on how to deal with clipping, both automated software devices, services, individuals, all that sort of thing. But then to your point, it's like, okay, well, as long as we're in there doing that, we may not know exactly what the settings on this contrast curve need to be, but we know we'll need it. So why not bring a file back to our retoucher that already has the baseline layers that they need to start working?
In addition to that, you want something that's going to work for all your images. You want something that if it's an all black item, or it's all white item, or it's the mid-tones grays, how do we get that agile, scalable thing? Well, so what we'll do is, with the help of, you know, my team, and there was a lead retoucher who worked with me, we broke down curves into three subsets. We made a preset for your shadows, a preset for midtones, and presets for highlights. And that's added automatically. And each one of those was at, let's say, the 50, 60% so that you could add or take away. But by isolating just tone curves into three different layers, we right now added something that's scalable, meaning because we have a bunch of black items, we just know, oh, we just unclick the black box, or a bunch of white items, we're going to pay attention to this area. So we never went too far with anything. And we really did this heavy lifting mentality so that when we were building things, you would never say, oh, we have to take this off, this doesn't work.
You shared this with me during our pre-production call. You shared your screen and you showed some of these files that had these, which I thought, you know, was a really smart way to sort of standardize the way that a file gets prepared for retouching, which is like what you're saying is that you isolate the various areas of the images that you might need to apply a tone curve in a certain way or whatever the adjustment is, but leave the flexibility there. You know, obviously doing this in the, you know, everyone's going to roll their eyes when I say this because this is like the most obvious thing ever, but obviously doing this in a way that is lossless, that we're not impacting the image in a way that can't be undone. But we can go in and just turn on and off the things that we need, make adjustments to opacity in the way that we need it. The what you showed me, and unfortunately, doesn't do a lot of good in the medium that we're sharing this information with our listeners now. It's not a visual medium, it turns out. But what you showed me was really cool in the way that you showed me how you had all of these different types of images, some of which had more shadows and some of which had more shiny and reflective areas. And the layer structure was the same. The way it was all set up was the same. That's the standard. And then that's the 80% that we're talking about. The 20% is the retoucher going in and looking at it and saying, which of these settings looks better? What can I massage to get this across the finish line? And all of this is using tools that every studio is using already. And that's the thing that I thought was really great about it, is focusing your early automation efforts on the tools and technology that you're using today. Capture One, Photoshop, whatever else it might be, seems like a great way to start to build an automated process that really adds value.
It is. And what we found is that, well, why don't we piggyback off of money and time and effort that Photoshop's used? So Photoshop now has it that you can make masks based on shadows, midtones, and highlights. So when we're making a curve for shadows, we then had the Photoshop select for the shadows for us. And then we went up the scale. So Adobe invested a lot of money into that technology. We just cherry picked it. So part of what I'm here today, or just in general, what we were working on the studio is, how do we take what's out there and existing? How do we cobble it together so that we're better today than we were yesterday? We can continue and keep going till we hit our roadblocks, till we hit our thresholds. And that's what, you know, I got, there was a team of people and we were able to just keep, well, can't you do this? Well, what if you go this way? Could you use box files and then send them that way? We just kept playing and slowly we kept seeing more light, you know, daylight, and basically product on white, tabletop photography got 25 to 35% faster before we were finished.
And critical to this process, it seems to me, Mark, would be getting somebody who has a little bit of a bird's eye view of the process, who's touching on what the photographers or digitechs are doing on set in Capture One, what the retouchers are doing. Can you tell me a little bit about your thoughts on this? Like, it seems like you kind of need to get somebody out of the weeds a little bit and starting to identify, everybody's doing this one thing, but doing it a little bit differently. Let's take the best pieces of all of it and create a standard.
Yes, but when you say standard, let's really look at what standard is. Every set that's shooting tabletop is using the same lighting, the same settings, same, you know, two strobes on the side, one on top, piece of plexi, a light underneath it. We're all shooting in Capture One Pro. Okay, well, what can we do in Capture One Pro? Can we start adjusting the tone and maybe saturation or other things that would work on all images? And so once we decided to do that, we then baked into C1 Pro, every camera that goes on that set automatically levels and adjustments could be set so there's never user error. So right there, we've standardized. So then when we add clipping paths, we have to do quality control on those clipping paths to make sure it's 100%. Well, the person who's doing quality control on that doesn't have to be a senior retoucher. It could be a digitech who's not working that day. It could be anyone in the studio. But then once that person's there and they verify that the clipping paths have integrity, why not add the tone curves and the build out that the retoucher will then use? But when you've already passed off this file, It's been vetted that it's correct. It has a correct path. You've dropped out the background. You've added white. You've added tone curves and any other adjustments that might be needed for that type of studio work. Hmm. Standardizing means you start at the it's a domino effect. You start at the very beginning and you're taking it all the way to where the expertise of your senior retoucher comes in.
One of the things that you mentioned in there struck me as a pretty critical part of building in a process or evolving a process to include more automation, which is that QC part. Obviously, all through the production process, there's all sorts of moments where you can apply QC, and studios do today. But really having, you know, like you mentioned, getting image files back from, if you sent them out maybe to get the paths done, and then you're bringing them back in, taking that extra moment of like, let's look through all of them and just make sure that we're ready for the next step, as opposed to jumping into the next step. And then you get, you know, a third of the way into your images and you find some paths that are just completely way off the path, so to speak. Pun intended, definitely. It strikes me that that QC process becomes an area where almost of investment of a little bit of time, because you're getting way more value from that time, since you're saving so much time in other places, that you do need to build back in that sort of like, let's have a person take a moment and just check and make sure that our automation didn't go off the rails somewhere.
Yeah. And the thing is, even within automation, the first thing we did was the process of checking paths, we build an automated workflow. And in that case, it looked like the F keys were the way to work. So you push F1, you immediately see the integrity of the background. You push F1 shift, you're off of it. Push F2, you're dropping out your backgrounds, adding white. You push F3, and anything you want to add, or is what we did, we took it a little bit further to start using scripts to add in the tonality and maybe color adjustments and things like that.
Right. Very, very interesting. We could have kind of started this way, but I wanted to kind of come back to this. But as we're talking about some of these ideas in automation, and we talk a lot on this podcast, as you know, Mark, about the idea of agile and scalability.
Sure.
Sometimes, especially on this show, the way that we talk about it, it can feel like kind of a thing that very big companies or very big studios start to think about and invest in. But let's define agile and scalable a little bit, because there definitely is an application to any studio of any size who just wants to be able to work in a way that's smarter. So when we talk about agile and scalable, am I incorrect in saying, Mark, that really what we're just talking about is processes that are repeatable and that we can automate, but we're not locking ourselves into anything that we can't undo in some way?
It's funny. Agile is everywhere. You know, I've listened to many, many of your episodes, and I see the word thrown around quite a bit, and scalable. Like, that's what e-commerce is about. I like to sort of bring it back. In this case, it's more like do-it-yourself, DIY approach. And within that, really, what's driving this is faster delivery, that yes, it improves consistency and quality, and ultimately it's saving the company money and being more productive. That's why it has to be flexible and scalable, or agile and scalable, is because it needs to do those things. Hmm. And it can't just do it part of the time. It has to do it on 100% of the images. So it's better to know 100% of the images get to a certain threshold 100% of the time, and then we work on the other percentage in fine tuning. But because of building in that it is agile and scalable, and that's rock solid to your foundation. It's like we're building houses, we're not renting apartments. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And so that's what agile and I think scalable are, is that a person, you know, where we were going, which unfortunately we never got to launch fully, was that we were going to implement this in the UK, in Argentina, and also to one of the new studios in Taiwan. Hmm. And that was where this can go, is that because it's so defined for what works for us, but then I'd say to everyone else, it's what works for your company, your brand, that if you have three sets going, all the content that's coming for those three sets, when it's going through the process, they're all going to have this foundation that's the same, and it started to capture. So if anyone needs to make any adjustments or edits a little bit later on, they already know the steps that led to it. They know exactly where to go to undo that.
We are going to ask you to lend a bit of your experience and expertise in some of this idea, Mark. And I am going to ask, you know, one of the things, my personal experience, especially with using things like Photoshop scripts and things like that, is that you have to just be aware of the weak points potentially, or the possible failure points. So in your experience, Mark, What should a studio team be aware of? What failure points when they're looking at things like automation? What are some of the pitfalls or things that maybe you think they can watch out for to avoid making some of the mistakes that maybe you or others have made in the past?
Okay, so I made all the mistakes. I am the living mistake maker. I trust me. What happened at Stanley Black & Decker was they slowly, from doing being like a generalist, I sort of went into the product on white realm. And when I realized that it could be done faster, and it was pretty much myself and a few other associates, I just kept looking at this and saying, well, scripts seem to work. Let's just build scripts and see what happens. So I'd build all these complicated presets, and then I worked with one of my associates to get a script going. And then I just saw, oh, they can just get overloaded, and we can just get a bunch of images that look like a disaster. So what I would say is the failure point is complexity. So it's making small incremental growth, and then you want to join each one of those presets or connect the automation in ways so that if something gets tripped up, if there's an issue, because everyone on the team was part of building this and knows it in and out, it's like a mechanic who knows everything under the hood, they can go in and make adjustments so that it's not like, oh, Rob made the script, he's on PTO today, and we just had a meltdown on this rush, you know, request that has all these images, it's not working. Well, so what we did is when we build the scripts, Rob, or this, that's a team member for us, he was able to build it so the user could pick and choose what presets get added together in his script. So his script wasn't a script as much as you can pull together and cobble all these verified presets that are guaranteed not to be too complex on top of each other. And the way that they'll come out, you get something a little bit more complex, but you use a bunch of simple steps that were additive.
That was exactly what I was thinking in this regard too, is that I think anybody who has any amount of experience in the industry has had that experience of like a Photoshop script or action that you're trying to apply to a batch of images fails at some point in the process. And it turns out there isn't a great way to know where it failed or how. Yeah. And you end up finding yourself having to go through and rerun everything. And so I think you're right on. I think taking, you know, breaking some of those things down into individual sort of building blocks, so to speak, that can be applied when they're needed and in ways that will, you know, benefit the nature of the image that they're being applied to. That's a great way to kind of work around that. As we are kind of wrapping up the conversation on this part of it, Mark, and I want to mention again that we've talked, Mark, about getting some of the other members of your team to dig into some of these things and like talk specifically about some of these ideas that we touched on today in a future episode when we can kind of coordinate getting everybody all together. But for this sort of preview to that, is there anything else that you want to touch on as we wrap up the episode?
Sure. I think little changes and a lot of little changes are big changes, especially if you're doing them time and time again. And that's what e-com is about. You know, one season's white shirt, the next season's black pants, they don't change that much. But if you're shooting white shirts again, isn't it nice to come back to that season knowing, oh, this is how we shoot white shirts? And it's not so much from the knowledge and experience of, oh, these are my settings at work, is that what we have as a workflow can handle these white shirts, can handle the black pants in the same time, and yet we can all move on to the more creative, the more, you know, exciting parts of our work. But there's no doubt that any studio out there can really harness small baby steps, and you'll see it. It takes a while, it takes work, but you'll get there, you'll make improvements, and then you just keep getting hungrier for bigger and bigger improvements.
Very good. Very well said, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on with us. And like I said, we are excited to have you back on to dig a little bit more. I'm sorry if it sounds like to our listeners I'm being a little cryptic. I'm not trying to be, but we wanted to kind of break up this conversation with Mark into a little bit of the philosophy of automation and then dig into like some of the specifics that him and his team worked on. So very much looking forward to having you back on to dig into that conversation, Mark. And thanks for your time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. I got to tell you, we listen to the show all the time. We've learned so much from it. If I can share and just give a little bit back to so many other your guests and companies that have shared their inner successes, their failures, it really, we're in it together. So it's the least I can do. And thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this episode. We will be releasing a part two of this conversation with Mark, and we'll be bringing the rest of his team to talk details on some of the tools they developed to bring automation and agility to the tools that they were already using in the studio. Many thanks to our guest, Mark Berenson, and thanks to you for listening. The show is produced by Creative Force, edited by Calvin Lands. Special thanks to Sean O'Meara. I'm your host, Daniel Jester. Until next time, my friends.